Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is made possible by our supporters over on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and get your own RSS feed with ad-free shows and extra episodes every month, then head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. We are back yet again here for another episode of the Nerd Cave Retro Show. My name is Jason Robbins.
And my name is Derek Diamond.
So it was Easter weekend, and today is April 1st. And,
It's the most wonderful day of the year.
Did you see any weird April Fool's Day posts today? I didn't really see any today.
None that gave me pause. Because I don't know if you feel the same way, but April Fool's Day to me has lost a lot of its luster.
Yeah.
I remember back in the day, like my favorite April Fool's prank is when IGN created the fake Legend of Zelda movie trailer.
Yeah.
I think it was back in 2009. And I truly believed it as I was watching it. And I was like freaking out, like, oh my God, we're finally going to get a Zelda movie. And it said coming April 1st. And I'm like, oh,
I think it was last year or the year before when Bruce Campbell tweeted out that they were going to be doing a reboot of Briscoe County Jr. And I got so excited. And then it came out, it was an April Fool's Day joke. And I'm like, I'm never getting got again, ever.
I call this National Don't Trust Anybody Day.
Yeah.
Because I feel like some of them aren't even really witty anymore.
Yeah.
Like they're just to me blatantly obvious. Like nobody puts any effort into it. It's like they do it because, oh, we got to put something out for April Fool's. Mm-hmm. So let's just think of the most random thing we can.
Yeah. I remember when Think Geek used to do stuff for April Fool's, and
oh, they were great.
Yeah. Blizzard used to do stuff for April Fool's, and I don't know. It's just kind of like you said, there's really no thought behind it anymore. It's just kind of, people will put out stuff that, you know, it's like, it's almost kind of mean. And it's like,
yeah.
I just avoid it at this point.
It's either mean or there's no like cleverness or thought put into it. I know we were talking before we started the actual show. I thought about putting out on our Twitter earlier that we were going to cease doing this podcast and launch a Final Fantasy exclusive.
Yeah.
Or just something based completely off of 80s Nintendo, but the regulars would have been like, you're lying.
And I was telling Derek that we were just going to do a strictly UFC podcast from now on.
Jacob would be down for that.
Yeah, he would.
He's
love
a UFC
that.
Fan, right?
Yeah, he's the
okay.
He has to keep me informed on all that stuff because I don't give two craps about it. at all, honestly.
It's so funny now that UFC and WWE, which are like opposites in the fact that one's, you know, predetermined and one is not.
Yeah.
But they're owned by the same entity now.
Yeah. That's the world we live in now.
Yeah. the world of unifications and corporations.
So did you play
but
anything?
But it's helped WWE for the better.
Oh, of course. And once they hit Netflix, like, that's a huge boon for Netflix. Once they yeah. get on there full time.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you get to play anything interesting this weekend? I know you had a lot of stuff to do for Easter.
Not too much. I will say, you know, before we really get into the show, I put out a poll a couple of weeks ago for the patrons to decide my next review. Because I wanted to do a wrestling game because this weekend is WrestleMania. But the Monday after, there's always like a big, you know, show on Monday Night Raw where they might have like some surprise returns or some kind of big, you know, storyline revelation. So I wanted to do a wrestling game, and I can't believe I haven't reviewed this yet. And I'm glad that this won the poll. It's widely considered to be one of, if not the best wrestling game of all time. No Mercy for the N64. So I'm really excited to, and I actually have a physical copy of it. So
oh, cool.
I'm going to get to play it as intended. But other than that, played a little bit of the Mario RPG remake and a little bit of Sonic Superstars, but nothing too extensive.
Yeah.
What about you?
Just what I was reviewing tonight. I really haven't had a whole lot of time to play anything. I did want to say that I did just put up a Patreon poll slash kind of getting a feel for what everybody is thinking, because we did get some good feedback about the roundtable discussion we did for March, which was, you know, just a couple days ago. But now is actually the perfect time to become a patron, because it's the beginning of the month. We just released the roundtable discussion a couple of days ago, so go be a patron. And I've just put up a poll, so in case, you know, just kind of get a feel if people want us to do more of that type of stuff, or, you know, because I know we like doing the commentary tracks, but there are some people that don't really listen to the commentary tracks. And we, you know, do you want us to do more roundtable stuff? Do you want us to try to get, I don't know, something, throwing in something a little different every month or every other month? So let us know. If you're a patron, go let us know on that post what you would like to see more from us.
Well, if you listen to my other show, you know I'm not shy about partaking in roundtable discussions. So if we do that more, I'm more than okay with that.
Yeah, I really had a good time with our roundtable discussion for last month. It was that had been on my chest for a while, that I wanted to talk about that. And we talked about physical media versus digital media and what we think is going to happen moving forward and the fate of physical media. So if that kind of discussion is what you're looking for, that's what we did last month. And I had a blast doing that.
Yeah, it was a fun discussion, you know, for the portion of it that I was able to be there, because I had to rush over from, I had to go to Tallahassee for a couple of days. So I actually set up one of my original podcast setups when we used to do only audio. And so I set everything up so that way I could just rush back to my hotel, mm-hmm. sit at my computer and hop on the Zoom call. And luckily it was only like 3 minutes away from where I was working. So
yeah,
it wasn't too much of a problem, but those church services can last way longer than I expected.
Especially if you get a long-winded priest, they can go for a while.
Or if, like, in this case, there were like, because I had to work on Friday too. And because Friday was Good Friday, there were, I swear to you, almost 250 people there.
Jeez.
It was nuts. And it was the same thing for Thursday.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, when I saw the attendance, I'm like, yeah, I'm not making it on time to start the podcast. But it all worked out. So
yeah, you were only a few minutes late. Derek wasn't there for like the first like 7 or 8 minutes, I think. So
which some might say is the best 7 or 8 minutes of the episode.
But it was a fun episode. It was me, Derek, Mr. Joey Image, and of course, Mr. Wiley Phelps. So if you want to get that episode, it does drop for the public. I forgot what day I said it to go for public, but if you're a patron, you get it way earlier than everybody else. So go be a patron and listen to that episode and let us know what you think.
Yeah.
But we got some news to get to tonight. You ready to jump into it?
Sure.
And as usual, if you have a news story you'd like us to cover, send them to nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. This first one is from Mr. Armez Jackson. From NintendoLife.com. There is a new game called Rebel Transmute that just dropped on the Switch not too long ago. Solo developer Evan Tor set out to make a new game in the crowded Metroidvania genre called Rebel Transmute. He launched a Kickstarter in 2022 and secured the funding to get the game made, and after a successful campaign and development period, it has finally made it to consoles and PC. It may not be a particularly innovative new entry in the genre, but what it lacks in novel ideas, it more than makes up for in polish and quality. It is great comfort food for the dedicated Metroidvania fan. It says it places you in the role of Moon Mikono, a space scrapper, in search of her mother who's gone missing in action. Her search brings her to the isolated planet of Terra 6, which was once home to an extensive research facility helmed by a mysterious foray corporation that her mother worked for. An EMP causes the moon ship to crash on Terra 6, and she wakes up 12 years later in a hostile and decrepit environment where something has since clearly has gone wrong. So this looks a lot like Super Metroid, and I'm all for it. So this, I looked it up. It is $19.99 on the Switch store, and I think I might be picking this up this week.
Yeah, that's not a bad price. And funny you say Super Metroid. I was going to say Metroid Fusion.
Yeah, actually,
is
way
what it
more
reminds me of. It's a little more animated than Metroid Fusion, but it has the same kind of style.
Yeah, it's got those Metroid Fusion colors too. That more of a purplish hue to everything.
Right. Yeah, and the story sounds interesting. You know, I like the Metroid games, so if this is anything like those, I think I'd be interested in checking this out. And I think 20 is about the right price for something like this, so I think it'd be worth it.
Awesome. I'm gonna pick that up myself.
Next up, from timeextension.com, looks like we're getting another Game Boy Advance SP clone this year. We're already getting an emulation-based GBA clone in the form of the Mayu Mini Flip, but rival firm Abernic is preparing its own device with the same form factor. The RG35XXSP has leaked in a short video on social media and clearly takes inspiration from Nintendo's popular clamshell handheld. There's, of course, a link to the Twitter article where you can see a video, and it's basically the Game Boy Advance SP.
I don't see
not
how
that
they're
that's
not
a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, this looks exactly like the Game Boy Advance, so I wonder if Nintendo's going to be like, hey, that looks a little too close to a Game Boy Advance there, Ambernick.
They're going to be like the meme of Leonardo DiCaprio from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where they're like,
yeah,
just pointing at it like, nope, no. Yep. I would seem Abernic is prepared to launch this alongside a revised 2024 model of the existing RG35XX, which it has already iterated on more than once. According to Retro Handheld, it is expected that the RG35XXSP will offer similar specs to the Plus and H, which means a 3.5-inch IPS screen with a 640x480 resolution, all-winner H700 chipset, dual-core G31 MP2 GPU, and 1 GB of LPDDR4 RAM. I like the idea of this. They got to change that name.
Yeah.
It does not roll off the tongue at all.
No, not at all.
It sounds like a computer virus from an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
You know, I would love to have one of these, but the problem is a 640x480 resolution, 3.5-inch screen. I don't even think my eyes would even adjust to that at this point. I would need readers that are like times five. Uh-oh, I think Derek got frozen. What happened? Oh, no. All right, I'm going to pause real quick. All right, there, we're back. You see, you didn't even know we were missing, so now we're back.
Wait, what happened? I blacked out for a second. Clearly.
Internet problems.
Yeah, they always happen on a Monday.
Yeah.
But what were you saying?
Oh, I was just saying that that small of a screen at this point, I would need to go get some, like, old man, you know, times five readers just to even see that screen.
And you know I'm not going to be able to read it because I have to wear these on a regular basis anyway. So you can count me out for that.
Yeah,
but
my eyes are getting
horrible. It's a cool idea.
Let's see. Konami.com. Digital bundle of two classic Felix the Cat games are available now. Konami Digital Entertainment today announced, and what day was this? This was the 28th. Of March, so just a few days ago, announced the digital release of Felix the Cat for PlayStation and Nintendo Switch in collaboration with Universal Products and Experiences and Limited Run Games. The classic NES and Game Boy titles from the 90s have been transported to the area of modern gaming as part of the Limited Run's Carbon Engine Retro lineup. Let's see, players take on the role of Felix on a rescue quest set in bizarre cartoon worlds. Felix's magic bag of tricks will give players a variety of eccentric vehicles, power-ups to save the day. The 8-bit adventures of Sharp-Witted Feline features a new quality of life enhancements, including save states and a rewind feature for new players to enjoy. I don't think it gives a price here, but those are now available, and we have been talking about these Felix the Cat games for a while now, so it might be time for me to go back and review one of these things.
I'm just still really surprised that of all the characters that they could pick to have some kind of a renaissance, Felix the Cat. Like, I remember the old cartoons, but I never played either of the games and never really got into Felix the Cat.
I mean, those cartoons were
before
crazy.
My time.
Those cartoons were crazy old when I was a little kid. Like, there was old, you know, those old scratchy black and white cartoons. Like, Felix the Cat's got to be what, like, 100 years old at this point?
Let's see. Felix the Cat.
At least 80.
Da, I would da, think. Da. First appearance was in 1919.
So
over 100 years old.
105 years old, this cat.
Jeez. Looks good for an old cat.
Yeah. Using all
the
nine
lives. I'd be curious to play these as well. You know, I mean, I watched the launch trailer, and they look like they could be pretty fun. Mm-hmm. They look like my kind of game, so I might give these a shot as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
From timeextension.com, Konami's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Hyperstone Heist just got even better. If you're a TMNT fan, which, let's be honest, who isn't, we have some good news to share. An exciting new fan hack for the Mega Drive / Genesis title, TMNT The Hyperstone Heist, has just been released online, adding a bunch of excellent new features to the classic Konami beat-em-up. This includes the addition of a new survival mode, a new super difficulty setting, and difficulty randomizer. Newly introduced colors for the turtles, based on the classic Mirage comics, and the ability to save and record high scores using SRAM. Of course, if you never heard of it, I did review this game on the show a while back. It was released for the Genesis in 1992. It plays like your classic Turtles beat 'em up. You know, if you've played, you know, the arcade game or, you know, TMNT2 for the NES or even as recently as Shredder's Revenge, it's the same kind of play style. But I'm glad they've updated it. You know, I think the Hyperstone Heist gets a little lost in the shuffle because of games like the arcade game Turtles in Time are just so revered and known, and rightfully so.
And it's a great game.
This is kind of a, yeah, it's a hidden gem when it comes to TMNT games.
It says the new hack for the game comes courtesy of Billy Time Games, who you may know already from his work on Ghostbusters Special Edition, the Sega Channel Revival Project, and his impressively long list of SRAM-based hacks for both SNES and Mega Drive Genesis.
Interesting.
So if you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at BillyTimeG. So go give him a follow and go get you some ROM hacks. That sounds fun. I don't know if I'd do the... I would definitely not do the difficulty randomizer, though. That just sounds awful.
No.
And the last story tonight, also from Armez Jackson. This is from NintendoLife.com. As Switch approaches the PS2's lifetime sales, Sony moves the goalposts. Boo! See, back in February, Nintendo confirmed that the Switch family had now sold over 139 million units since its launch in 2017. Almost 2 months later, it has now comfortably passed the 140 million mark, which means the Switch only needs to sell a further 15 million to surpass the PS2 at 155 million units, right? Well, not quite. According to PlayStation's ex-CEO Jim Ryan, who resigned as of April 1st, 2024. Wait, is that today? Who appeared on the official PlayStation podcast to commemorate his time at the firm, the PS2 has actually sold a total of 160 million units. This means the Switch is roughly 20 million units shy of becoming the best-selling console of all time by current estimates. Let's see. It had a lengthy lifespan. The PS2 originally launched March 2000, production ending in 2013. It had 13 years on the market. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Switch could do it, but why did they all of a sudden say go from 155 to 160? I mean, I was kind of skimming here to see if he had any receipts to back that up, but I do not see where that's any sort of truth.
I think the higher ups at Sony are sweating a little bit.
I think they all went out and bought 5 million PS2s. I was like, nope, sold 160 million. But at that point, once you get up to like the over 150 million units sold, it's like you both win. So who cares?
I will still say I did not expect the Switch to sell as many units as it has.
And see,
I'm very happy that it has, but I thought it would do well.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it would do as well as it has.
Oh, I love how well it's done, even though everybody thought it was going to be a flop at the beginning. They're just like, oh, this is the stupidest thing Nintendo's ever done. It's like, it's worse than the Wii, but I'm like, or the Wii U. I'm like, no, this is, everybody wants a hybrid. Like a hybrid console was just genius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Like it couldn't have gotten worse than the Wii U.
Yeah.
I'll just say that.
And, you know, the Switch has only been out for 7 years now. It took the PS2 13 years to get to 155 or 160, however many it is. I mean, we could still squeeze another year or two out of the Switch, at least.
Well, you know, with the rumors now saying that we're not going to get the new console until 2025.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, another year for the Switch to keep selling.
You know, they could do another iteration of the Switch this Christmas. They could put out another crazy good game that they could sell 20 million more units easily just over the holidays this year, I would think.
Yeah, a lot of it'll depend on, like you said, a new game or maybe like a special edition. It's possible.
They're going to be like,
I'll be curious to see.
Sorry, no Switch 2, but here's Mario Galaxy 2 for Christmas this year.
Another remake.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of the news. So let's go into this month in video game history. Been a while since we've done history. I forgot where the button was. On April 19th of 1982, Namco releases Dig Dug, manufactured by Atari, and North America. I love Dig Dug style games. Like the current iteration of the Dig Dug style is like the SteamWorld Dig games and things like that. Like, I love those games. I just love that style of game.
Dig Dug was actually one of the first arcade games I ever played.
Really?
I remember playing it in a doctor's office. They had a Dig Dug arcade cabinet. And I loved it. You know, I still like playing Dig Dug. I don't play it very often. But it is one of those games like, you know, Donkey Kong or Bust a Move or Burger Time. Mm-hmm. Like or like a Pac-Man game. Yeah. When you see it, you just automatically want to play it.
Yeah,
because it is an iconic arcade game, not level of like a Space Invaders or Pac-Man, but it's one of the first titles I think of when I think of like classic arcade games from the 80s.
And just that art on the side of the arcade mm-hmm. cabinet and everything is just iconic. It just makes you want to play it.
Mm-hmm. April 21st of 1989, Nintendo releases Super Mario Land on the Game Boy, introducing Princess Daisy to the Mario series.
Daisy.
Daisy. One of the more fun games for the Game Boy, even though I think the sequels were better. It's very much like Super Mario Brothers, and you compare it to Mario Brothers 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Super Mario Brothers had to exist for these other games to happen.
Yeah.
But 2 and 3 are better games. Same thing with Super Mario Land.
I still don't think I've ever played Super Mario Land.
You should give it a shot. I can't remember if it's on the Switch Online store. It might be.
I think it is, but I need to renew my Switch Online. I got rid of it. I turned off my renewal back in January, I think it was, and I just never turned it back on.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, you should.
Sorry, it's very pollinated outside for the last week or so.
You don't have to tell me.
Yeah, let's see. April 23rd of 1995, the Satellaview accessory for the Super Famicom console is released exclusively in Japan. What is the... Oh, I remember this thing. We talked about this several times.
I wish this would have been released in the States.
I mean, it's a satellite modem.
It's almost unheard of in the 90s.
I know. For 1995, that's like 20 years ahead of its time, easily.
And don't forget that additional whopping 512 kilobytes of RAM.
Well, you could put... it did have a 8 megabyte memory pack you could stick on there.
Oh, man. Let's not talk crazy.
Yeah. How much did this thing cost in Japan? Does it say? Like, I just want to know what it would have cost in America if they would have actually put this thing out.
At the time, it would have been $150.
Ooh, that's actually not bad. I would think that something like this, like a satellite modem, would have been like $300-$400 back then.
Which, if you adjust it for inflation in 2023, it would have cost $310.
Yeah, that's about what I figured.
That's what I figured it would be anyway.
Yeah.
Japan got so much cooler stuff than we did. Because they had the GameCube that could play DVDs.
Yeah.
And that upset me so much. Because Nintendo was really big on like, no, the GameCube is a game console. Yeah. It is not a DVD player. So what do you do in Japan? You release one that plays freaking DVDs.
I really do think Nintendo messed up by not making the GameCube able to play DVDs. Because I think if the GameCube was able to play DVDs, it would have easily been rivaled up there with the PlayStation. It would have been neck and neck with the PlayStation 2, I believe. Because A, the Nintendo had arguably a better controller. 2, and Nintendo games. I mean, and the games still look great. I honestly, and I'm going to say this, this might be a hot take, but I think GameCube games to this day look better than PS2 games. I don't care what anybody says. I love the PS2, but the GameCube games, they just look and sound better than the PS2.
I won't argue that. I'm going to be very curious to see what the Twitter audience thinks of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get punched in the face for it, but that's just my, that's my opinion.
Well, I'm right there with you. So you at least have one supporter. see, April of 1996, LucasArts releases Indiana Jones and His Desktop Adventures for Windows and Mac. What a meta title Desktop Adventures is.
Yeah, I think that you should find a ROM of that and review it.
Okay.
Because you do, yeah, you, I mean, you've done the educational games before, so I think that's more of your forte.
Forte, I don't know what else it could be, but it's not a, the term I'm thinking of is not great. It might be my burden to bear, but I mean, I'd be interested in it. Like, I didn't play a ton of those computer games, but I like Indiana Jones, so I'll see if I can find a ROM of it.
Okay.
I'll need something to review after I do No Mercy, so that might be it.
On April 13th of 2001, Big Ape Productions, I love that name, released The Simpsons Wrestling for the PlayStation in North America. I don't remember The Simpsons Wrestling game.
So I didn't either until I posted my poll on Patreon, and Nick W. actually said you should have put The Simpsons Wrestling because of how bad it is. I never played it, but I remember the reviews were awful.
Excuse me.
Yeah, because I'm even looking here. Allgame gave it 2 out of 5 stars. Game Revolution gave it an F. Oof. IGN 1 out of 10.
Oof, that's
an official
good
PlayStation
at all.
Magazine 2 out of 5 stars. That makes me interested to play it just to see how bad it truly is.
And Justin Nispel in the chat room says, "I don't talking about the GameCube." He says, "I don't know about that. God of War on PS2 was crazy first time." I will agree. God of War still looks great.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
For the most part, I think most of the GameCube games hold up better visually than the PS2 does. But that's just, like I said, that's my opinion. I mean, there are some great-looking PS2 games, but overall, I would say most of the GameCube games still look good.
Maybe I'll have to review this Simpsons Wrestling game in August for SummerSlam.
Do it, please. I want. I might actually play that with you. I might test it out and see, because it just looks terrible.
Yeah, it does. And finally, April 1st of 2003, Enix Corporation and Square Company officially merge, forming Square Enix.
That was in this the 2000s? I thought that happened in the 90s.
Mm-mm. No, Square was still its own thing. Weird. In the late 90s. But yeah, this was, I remember, a big deal when this happened, because it took me a while to even get used to the name Square Enix.
That's a Mandela effect, because if you put a gun to my head and said, when did Square and Enix become Square Enix? I would have said, like, 98, 99, you know, like late
90s. I was thinking
90s.
Maybe like 01, 02, but not 03.
I know, that seems really late.
It does. But that was a big deal for its time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember it happening. It just seems like it was a late 90s thing to me. Learn something new on the show all the time.
Yeah, Rampage in the chat said 6 golden coins is still great. Totally agree. I love Super Mario Land.
You reviewed that, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that. I still haven't played that either.
Now, if you play a Mario Land game, play that one.
Yeah, I know that's the one I need to play, but I just haven't gotten around to it. So much stuff to play.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
But that's going to bring us to the end of this month of video game history. Before we go into the review tonight, Derek, do you want to do our Patreon shout-outs?
Sure. As always, we'd like to shout out our awesome patrons over at patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. We want to shout out our newest patron, Brian Piotrowski, Nick W., Eld the Zombie, Yup Fed, a.k.a. Knife, James, a.k.a. at Jimbo Jr. on Discord, Raven, Danny House, Justin Nispel, John West, Daniel Salmon, Mr. B. Rez Coffee himself, Mike Eveland, Tyler Watson, Axblade07, R. Ms. Jackson, Carlos Ongoria, a.k.a. I am the Rampage!
Rampage!
Staff Sergeant Sketch, Gus and Penny, Matthew Salmon, Mr. Joey Image, and last but not least,
Mama Diamond.
Donna Diamond, thank you all so much for your continued contributions to keeping the lights on for us here at the Nerd Cave Retro Podcast. And for as little as a dollar a month, I'm running out of dollar analogies. I don't have one this week. I'll try and have one for next week.
You know what you can but get for, you know what you can, oh, the only thing you can get for a dollar these days, you know those little small packs of Juicy Fruit? They used to be 25 cents. Now they're like 85 cents. So that's, you can either get a month of ad-free shows for Nerd Cave Retro, plus a bonus episode, or you can go get yourself a pack, like the little four-pack of Juicy Fruit. So you make the choice.
I mean, to me, the choice is easy.
Yeah.
You go with the Nerd Cave Retro Patreon.
Of course.
And you get early access to our bonus episodes. Like we talked about earlier this month, we did last month, I keep forgetting it's April 1st. We did a roundtable discussion on physical media versus streaming/digital. We've also done numerous commentary tracks like Batman 89, Transformers the Movie, Gargoyles, Darkwing Duck, Tailspin, Real Ghostbusters. The list is near endless on what we've done. So if you want to be a part of our awesome Patreon community, just head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. And for new patrons, be sure to send us your social media info either on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram so we can give you a proper shout out.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And tonight, we're going to be talking about... Monster Party is a video game for the Nintendo Entertainment System released in North America in 1989 by Bandai. It was and remains a relatively obscure platform game for the console, having a small following among some players. The game both pays homage to and parodies horror pop culture, alternately featuring enemies and locations based on classic horror icons and parodic reinterpretations. Now... I had no idea what to expect of this game. I've seen this game occasionally out in the world. I've never picked up a copy of this game because I just didn't know what, it just seems like it wouldn't be that good, you know? It just seems like that kind of game. Like, it would be kind of mid to not that great. But what I found was kind of a oddly... weird, cool little game in this thing. Like, it's actually a hit. I think an actual hidden gem for the Nintendo. And it actually, when did this come out? It came out in June of 89. Let me look up something real quick. I want to look up, when did Ninja Gaiden come out for the Ninja Gaiden NES? When did that come out? December 9th. So this beat Ninja Gaiden by a couple of months, and this game actually has cutscenes in it. Now, Ninja Gaiden has been credited with being one of the first with, like, you know, moving cutscenes and things of that nature. But this sort of has sort of the same thing in the game, and it's got an actual story to the game, as weird as it is. But I think this should get some credit for having actual cutscenes in an NES game, as well as Ninja Gaiden. There's not as many as Ninja Gaiden. That's a very story-driven game. Like, you get, you know, you get the cutscenes after almost every single screen. This one doesn't do that. It's kind of sparse on the story, but the cutscenes are actually pretty decent. The story centers on a child named Mark, who was named Hiroshi in the original Japanese prototype, which actually there's a weird story behind that, too. This game was released, in America, and there was also there was going to be a Famicom version of this game, and the only known copy of it came up for auction a couple years ago, and it sold for like $5,000 or $6,000, something like that, the Japanese version, and it had different things in the game. Like, there's a part of the game where you come across a plant like boss type character, and in the Japanese version, that plant, which is like a Venus flytrap, actually is doing karaoke in the game, singing. So that's very reminiscent of Little Shop of Horrors. But Bandai was worried, you know, in America, that they would get sued. So a lot of stuff in this game got changed in the American version, but the Japanese version never really came out. And it was only that one copy of it that got sold in auction. And nobody got a ROM dump of it. So there's no way to play it. There's only screenshots of it that have survived from that auction.
You know, it's funny you say that, because, first of all, I had never heard of this game until I knew you were going to review it. And just looking at the cover art, and you see the Venus flytrap in kind of like the top left corner, mm-hmm. right beneath the logo, that's where my mind instantly went, was like, this reminds me of the cover of Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
I really do like the cover art, though. It I feel like it could be a multitude of things. Like, it's obviously a game cover art, but it could be like a graphic novel, could be like some type of old animated movie. So I do dig the cover quite a bit.
It's got an interesting cover, but it also has a cover that's kind of like, I don't know how good this is going to be. Like, the cover right. could be better than the game itself. Like, it's one of those type of games, right. you know? But I did play it for a good bit this weekend, and like I said, it's got a bit of a story to it, and it's kind of weird. So I'm going to try to explain the story here. It centers on a child named Mark, who on his way home from a baseball game is approached by a winged griffin-like alien named Bert. And
which is what happens after baseball games.
Yeah, that as it happens, he seeks assistance in ridding evil monsters from his realm, Dark World. Being the first person he encounters, Bert tries to enlist Mark as his aide in battle. Let's see, and that Mark's baseball bat will be as good as a good a weapon as any. Bert quickly whisks him away, and on the way to Dark World, magically fuses himself to Mark so that they are one being, with Mark able to transform into Bert for a limited time. And there's also, like, when you go through the game, Mark himself, which, hey, speaking of Mark, Mushmouth TV is in the chat room, Mark Simmons. Yeah. But this game is not about you, sir. Unless you had a baseball bat and went to a weird alien planet when you were a kid.
Which very well could be the case.
It could be. I mean, you never know with him. But you, as the Mark character, you only have a baseball bat, which is, you know, a very short weapon. You have to be right up on your enemies to hit them. But when you do get to change into Bert, you have ranged attacks, and you can fly, which is awesome. I love it when you get to change into Bert in the game. And sort of the premise of the game is it's a side scroller kind of platformer. It's not that difficult, but some of the bosses can be kind of difficult. And what you do is you go through each level, and you go in and out of these doors where you're looking for sort of the kind of boss type characters. Some of the rooms are empty, you know, and things like that, but you'll come across a monster that you defeat, and it'll drop a key. Once you get the key, you can exit the level and go to the next level. And there's like 8 levels in the game. And the further you get into the game, I wrote in my notes that the further you get into the game, you might want, if you do want to play this game, which I highly recommend, I would suggest a walkthrough for it, because you can very easily get lost in some of the later levels, because it's very almost like trying to think of a good analogy for what happens, but it's almost like Bugs Bunny's Crazy Castle, where you're going in and out of doors, trying to, you know, get where you're going. And it's one of those things where you're kind of in these castles, and it's almost a maze where you're going in and out of these doors. And if you don't know where you're going, it could take freaking forever to figure out where you're going. So it's best to just sort of use a walkthrough to get through that kind of stuff.
Something I'm curious about, like I like the being able to transform into Bert, but I know you said you can only transform for a limited time. Mm-hmm. What exactly do you have to do to transform into Bert? Or can you just kind of do it on command?
No, you have to, you get power-ups, and sometimes enemies will drop. I'm not sure what it is they drop, but sometimes they drop hearts, which, you know, of course, fill your life bar, and then they'll drop something where you just sort of touch it and you turn into Bert for 5 minutes or so. So I just sort of kill every enemy in sight so I can try to stay Bert as long as possible, because let's face it, ranged attacks are just better, and you can fly around. So it's, you know, it's always better to be the ranged attack character in any situation.
And who wouldn't want to play as a Griffin?
Exactly. It's awesome. And the graphics are pretty good for this game. They're weird, though. Like, this game is strange. Like, I wish I could describe it.
Would you call this the Earthworm Jim of the NES?
Sort of, yeah. Like, it's like the first level you go through, like the very first level you start with, you come out on this level and it's very, you know, green and lush, like you're in it's like a forest or whatever, and you're killing enemies. But then you get halfway through the level and everything changes, and then it turns, there's like skulls and, like, you know, guts, like all kind of weird, you know, rib cages and things everywhere. It just, like, it turns into this like horror landscape, and I'm like, this is freaking awesome. And like the music changes, and it's just, it's, and there's no rhyme or reason to it. It just does it, and it's just weird and cool.
I know it says here that one of the bosses you fight is a giant hopping fried shrimp.
Yeah.
Which then turns into an onion ring.
Yeah.
That's great.
One of the bosses, yeah, like it keeps, every time you think you killed that boss, it changes into something else. Like it goes from, you know, the fried shrimp to an onion ring. And it's like, what the hell is happening right now?
I see. I want to play this just to experience that alone. Yeah. Like, I loved the Earthworm Jim universe just because it's so, like, wacky and weird and nothing makes sense.
And then,
but that's what's great about it.
Then there's one part, in the very first level, there's one door you go into, and there's a big giant spider sitting there, and you walk in and he's like, I'm already dead. And you're just like... Okay, and you just walk out the door. And then later on in the game, and I kid you not, there is a boss where it's just zombies that dance. And all you have to do is let them finish their dance, and then you can leave the cave. Like, okay.
I love that. What happens if you don't let them finish?
I don't know. I didn't try to hit them or anything, but it's just sort of like... okay.
They all just swarm you, and it's like an instant kill.
But it's just weird. Like, it's such a weird game. Like, it's hard to explain. It's just something you have to experience.
I want to play this now.
Yeah,
I really do.
And it does have... And here's the thing. It does have a password system.
I figured.
But it's not, you know, it's not such a huge game that you would need a battery backup, but it is nice to have the password system so that you can kind of go back to the level that you were at. Because like I said, there's only like 8 levels to the game. It's not that long. Here's something interesting. Towards the end of the game, one of your enemies is a walking pair of pants.
Please tell me his name was Mr. Pants.
I don't know. I don't think it had a name. It was just pants walking around, and if they touch you, they'll kill you. So you got to take out the pants.
It just walks on the screen, and you hear somebody yell, "Pants!"
Worldwide pants. Ask your older uncle's kids about what worldwide pants. Some of the music in the game, music's not that great. It does tend to some of the music did tend to get on my nerves a little bit because it would be that kind of high pitched droney chip sound, and it's just kind of like, you should have done something different here because it does kind of get on your nerves a little bit.
And you would think a game like this with that fun, wacky, weird type of universe would have like a better choice of music that would reflect that.
Yeah, and it's not, most of the music's not bad. I mean, each level has its own different music, so there's a lot of variety there, but, you know, it's, some of it's just kind of like, this could have been better, you know?
That's disappointing.
But I do like, and like I said in my notes here, it does have that 80s sci-fi horror vibe that I really like. Like, if you like movies like Night of the Creeps, Or things like that. This is what that game feels like. Like, that movie is what this game feels like.
Okay.
So it's just...
pretty cool.
It's a weird vibe. It's a very vibey game. So if you're into that sort of 80s sci-fi horror type of vibe, definitely go try this game out. It's just that. That's what it is. It's just weird.
That should have been the tagline. It's vibey.
Yeah, it's very vibey. And just like once you see, I didn't even know what to think. Like, it took me so long to write notes for this game. I didn't even write them, my notes, until before the show here. Because honestly, I was playing the game and I didn't know what to write. I'm like, this is so weird that I don't even know what to say about it. Like, it's something you have to just play for yourself to get it. Like, there's no amount of me explaining. Like you said, there's a freaking fried shrimp you have to fight. Like, okay. It's like a...
Yeah, how do you put that into words other than you fight a fried shrimp?
Yeah, it's a game that is literally a fever dream. Like, there's no describing a fever dream. It's just, you just have to experience it to know what it is.
I wonder if that was the inspiration behind the game.
It might have been. Because, like, this is one of those games where you're going through it and you're just like, somebody was on drugs when they made this game. Obviously, they were doing a lot of shrooms when they made this game.
I feel like you probably had to be to make a game like this.
And I think that's why this game probably didn't do that well. Like I said, you know, this came out in 1989 in prime NES era. Like, 88 right. through 91 was like the prime of the NES. And it seems like this would have been up there with some of the because it is a good game. Like, there's nothing wrong with this game. I think the fact that it's probably just, it was weird as hell. It didn't sell well. They probably didn't know how to market this game.
Yeah, and that's tough with things like this, because how do you like the premise? Like, I hate to keep going back to Earthworm Jim, but it's the only comparison mm-hmm. I can think of. Earthworm Jim fit the 90s culture,
yeah,
because it had that weird, wacky, and even like a little gross kind of humor. To me doesn't really fit in the 80s.
Exact. I was just thinking that as you were saying that. I think this game was about 4 or 5 years ahead of its time. Like, if this would have been an SNES game around 93, 94, it probably would have perfectly fit in with the 90s vibe of gross and weird and just strange.
I don't know if this would be an accurate comparison, but it's just one I can think of. If this came out around the same time of Beavis and Butthead,
yeah,
I feel like it would have hit perfectly.
Do you remember Liquid Television?
Vaguely.
It was a show on MTV. For those who don't know what Liquid Television was, it was this show on MTV where they would showcase like different artistic, like, it's where Aeon Flux came from and Beavis and Butthead came from. And it showcased different, cartoons, animated short films and just weird, stop motion animation type stuff. It's just a really weird, cool TV show of just weird things. And that's what this game felt like to me, was an episode of Liquid Television.
That's a good comparison. I like that.
So I don't really have much else to say about it other than if you're into just weird stuff, go play it. I mean, this is not a bad NES game. I was very surprised at how well it played and just, I had fun with just how weird the game was. It plays well, it's weird, and it's definitely something that needs to be experienced and not, I could sit here and talk for 3 hours about this game, but you're just not going to get it until you go play it. So I would say if you're interested, definitely go play this game because it's odd. It's very, very odd.
So what would you give this for a number score?
I mean, I'm really into the genre of this type game. Like, I love horror movies. I love 80s horror and sci-fi. So this gets a solid 8 from me. Like, this is, if it weren't for the music and how grating it was sometimes, it probably would have been a 9. But the music kind of knocked it down a little bit. But other than that, I really, really like this game. And I'm kind of angry that I missed it at the time.
But better late than not to have it experienced at all.
True. But that's going to bring us to the end of the review for this week. Derek, what's coming up next week?
Next week, I'm going to be reviewing, thanks to you, the Patreon subscribers, I'm going to be reviewing WWF No Mercy for the N64. I'm probably going to create myself as a wrestler and put myself through the gambit of the Attitude Era.
Nice.
So we'll see how that goes. And I did want to throw this out there, in addition to, of course, the Derek Diamond Experience. I had a rare chance to actually be a guest on a podcast called the Creators Anonymous podcast. It's going to be dropping this Thursday. Talking about, my film background and how I got into it. Talk about the shorts that I've done. And we also talk about the Nerd Cave Retro podcast.
Awesome.
So you can check that out this Thursday. I'll send out a link whenever it's available.
Awesome. And go check out the Open Micers podcast at Open Micers and openmicers.com. Me and Mr. Jacob Craig, every week we talk to different comedians, actors. We have hostful episodes where, like this last week, where we had an unexpected hostful episode because
it was a good one, though.
Our guest literally dropped out like 2 minutes before the show because he got invited to go. He got to be an MC at the Improv in Orlando, and we were like, "Dude, go do that! Like, don't worry about our show." So we had to do an impromptu hostful episode. And it went places. So go check it out at Open Micers on Twitter and Instagram.
You could say that it was an improv episode because of the improv.
It was interesting. So go check it out. We got into the whole P. Diddy controversy and talked about Nickelodeon, and we just we found out some, we searched the internet live while doing the show, and we found out some weird stuff about these people. So,
if no one's watched the Quiet on Set documentary, it's,
I haven't watched it. I don't know if I can put that kind of negativity in my brain right now.
If you feel that way, then I would advise against watching it because it's pretty dark.
Yeah. I mean, would you recommend it though, if you grew up in that era?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. But if you don't feel like you need it, like if you're in a kind of a bad place, don't watch it.
Okay.
If
I'm
you're
gonna
not,
stay
then
far away. And I will say before we go, I saw two movies this last week. We of course got to watch the new Ghostbusters movie, which I thought was awesome.
I
have you seen
it
yet? Oh, you haven't seen it. Oh, it's so good. I loved it. And I saw me and Angelina, we went and saw Immaculate this weekend. And if you're into like 70s style, like Rosemary's Baby-ish style horror movies, go see Immaculate. I dug it a lot. It's very, very 70s vibe to it.
I want to see Godzilla and Kong, too.
I'm probably going to go see that this week. I still have to see Godzilla Minus One. I still haven't seen that yet.
I haven't either, but I've heard it's excellent.
Ah, I've missed so much good stuff. I need to get back. After this last week, I remembered how much I love going to the movies. So I'm going to start trying to go to the movies at least two times a month, probably.
That's a good goal.
But that's going to do it for this week. Is there anything else before we go?
I don't think so.
All right, well, let's get out of here. If you want to email us at nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. You know what our link tree is? Just go to nerdcaveretro.com. That takes you to our link tree. That takes you everywhere you need to go. All of our socials, our Patreon, our merch shop. We have a Discord link on there if you want to be part of our Discord. Also, if you don't want to be a patron, but you enjoy our show and you're like, hey, I'd like to throw you guys a couple of bucks for being awesome, we have a Cash App and a PayPal button on there too. You just go straight there, give us a couple of bucks and say, good job, guys. Or you can go to ncrmerch.com. We got all kind of stuff for sale. T-shirts, hats, stickers, bags, mugs, whatever you need. And also, if you can't do that, I understand times are tough. Go leave us a review and or a 5-star rating on all podcasting platforms. Derek, please tell them what it's all about.
May the way of the hero lead to the Triforce.
Yes.
Master Blaster runs Bartertown.
Hey, Derek, have you heard the news?
What news?
We officially have our very own line of coffee at brezcoffeeco.com.
That's right. Nerd Cave Retro now has its very own medium roast coffee.
If you want to try it yourself or even some of the other awesome flavors like Wizard's Potion, which is a butterscotch, caramel, and hazelnut flavored roast.
Or the Dragon's Breath roast, which is a cinnamon dolce flavored roast.
They have tons of different flavors, and you can also just get a regular Colombian roast and add any flavor to it that you want. They even keep their seasonal roasts all year round.
If you need that boost to get you through those all-night gaming sessions, then head over to brezcoffeeco.com and use the promo code NCR for 10% off your order.
This podcast is a Zoo House LLC production.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.